It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are. With Dan Z and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible. On the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last! Where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hi, this is Brian J. Jones, author of George Lucas Alive, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Best-selling author Brian J. Jones has written the long-awaited revelatory biography of the most iconic name in Star Wars, George Lucas. His new book, George Lucas Alive, debuted in early December of 2016 and is already a bestseller on Amazon.com. Brian brings an impressive resume to the world of Star Wars literature, and we are delighted to have him on Coffee with Kenobi. Welcome, Brian.
And thank you. It's so great to be here, Dan.
Thank you. Well, it's just in the short few moments we've had before we started our conversation, I already know you're just going to be a huge hit with listeners. And once they read this book, it's unbelievable. And I'm interested to see what first brought this idea of the project to you.
Weirdly, George Lucas brought it to me. Not personally, but I had written, my previous book was a biography of Jim Henson. And Jim had worked with George Lucas on Labyrinth, as I think most Lucas fans know.
Sure.
And so I had written a little bit about the two of them on Labyrinth. But after my Jim Henson biography came out, from what I heard, he had sent a note over to Random House. And said, "Oh, I was great friends with Jim. You know, this is a terrific book. What a great book this is about Jim." And I thought, "Oh my God, he's dying to be the next subject that I do." So I wrote him a letter, which I nursed for it seemed like months, but I think it was several weeks. Wrote him a note and I sent it to him off at Skywalker. And I waited and finally heard back through his personal assistant, who's a lovely woman, who said, Mr. Lucas is just a really private person and doesn't want to, be interviewed or participate in any of this. So, then I went to bed for several weeks. But what most people told me later was, "My God, he told you no. He never says anything to anybody." But so that was the seeds of the project. After that happened, I thought, well, he's such a great subject and he talks a lot anyway over the last 50 years. And there's so much stuff out there. This would be really fun to approach as a deep drill, archival, read, watch, listen to everything. And it's a story that hasn't been done. Nobody's written anything on him since the late 90s, but nobody's ever really tried to wrap their arms around all of this stuff and kind of put it together to tell his story. We've got terrific books on Star Wars, and we've got terrific books on, the Indiana Jones series. Lots of really great work out there on the projects, but nobody's sort of tried to, pull it together and tell his story through these projects. It turned into a gigantic research project, probably even bigger than I anticipated when I started it. There was actually a point where I despaired of ever finishing it, but finally pulled together. But it was really a lot of fun and just tons and tons of stuff out there. But it sort of came about because he had actually reached out to my editor of Jim Henson and said, "Hey, this was a great book. I really liked it."
Isn't that wonderful? You'll always have that memory. And just the fact that he – not only is he he's a fan of yours, it sounds like, and in a way he's kind of giving you his blessing, which is quite amazing. So you mentioned that there's a lot of information out there, and a lot of times George has spoken over the last 50 years, and of course that's true. So how did you compile your research for George Lucas Alive and kind of disseminate what to use and what not to use? It must have been quite daunting.
Yeah, one of my first real job, and you and I are both English majors, and my first real job as a, out of college was I was a legislative analyst for a U.S. senator. And part of your job when you're doing that sort of thing is, you know, your member will say to you, get me everything you can on this particular subject. And so you go out and you, you know, you read everything you can and you talk to people and you compile all this information and you put it together and hopefully a short brief. Being short is always a problem of mine, but, you know, you put all this information together and present it to your member and to help him make an informed decision. And that's actually really great practice for biography because that's essentially what you have to do. So what I, the way I approach this project is, you know, I mean, I tried to get my hands on anything that had the word Star Wars, Indiana Jones, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, you know, just down the list and litany of people he knew. You know, I watched the documentary on John Milius. You know, you watch movies with you know, like Apocalypse Now, you watch it with commentary. You watch THX-1138 with Lucas's commentary. You know, you try to get a hold of everything you can that he may have touched or commented on. And I found that a really great place to find a lot of these things was doing archival research and finding little teeny newspapers in the Midwest in the 70s, you know, when they needed content and they would pull this. I would find an interview with George Lucas, for example, that might have run in, you know, the LA Times or in New York or something. And because there's tons and tons of stuff in those papers, they had cut the interview down to about, you know, 12 inches. Well, I would find the entire thing in, you know, the newspapers in Omaha, because they were looking for great content and they would run these long, long interviews with people. So a lot of times it was just a matter of like just doing the archival research, going out there, pulling everything you can and looking in these little places where, you know, normally you don't expect to find the big Hollywood interview because they loved the content. So it was, you know, it was just typing the word Star Wars into, you know, every search engine, which brings you up thousands and thousands of hits, and just trying to go through everything, you know, trying to go through every New York Times story and LA Times story and Washington Post and Wall Street Journal. And those are just the big hitters for starters, and just pulling and printing out all that stuff. I have a gigantic archive on my, you know, computer, and in, I'm still fairly analog. I print a lot of stuff out and I put them in black binders and have those. So it's, you know, it's just a matter of being, I think, going to use a word he would approve of, being a archaeologist for yes. material like this.
You know, when I was writing these questions, I thought about you're almost a researcher really is like an archaeologist. And you mentioned just how fascinating he is. And honestly, Lucas is a bit of an enigma. Now we know so much about him. He's practically yeah. as mythical as his creation, but I think there's still so much unexplored about him. What are some of the things you discovered about George Lucas while writing this book that maybe isn't as common as many people already know?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's fun doing research on him because, you know, I'm using a lot of sources people have probably seen, but it's when you start laying them end to end, you do start to see a lot of those kind of patterns and a lot of those little quirks that sort of define him and make him who he is, you know. And one of them, and I think this is somewhat well known, but the extent of it really surprised me, is just this compulsive need for control, which I made sort of the underlying theme of the book. You know, that's what makes him George Lucas, is the fact that, you know, he does not suffer fools gladly. He wants to do it his way. And no matter what you think of the end product, for the most part, he has almost always been right. You know, and just with a studio like Universal cutting 4 minutes out of American Graffiti never forgave that, because they were cutting the movie down because they could. They didn't respect the artistic view. You know, I mean, this unswerving, undying need to adhere to the vision of the artist, I think, is really something remarkable. You know, really something that deserves to be, I think, you know, looked at anew and respected these days. This is a guy who, whether you like the movie or not, he thought he was putting it all up there. That's one of the things he said about Howard the Duck, of all things. Hmm. You know, they said, would you do it again? He said, you know what? I'm really happy with what we got up there on the screen. And if I had to do it again, I absolutely would not. And he would use the sports metaphor, saying, you know, sometimes you come to the plate and you at least you're swinging away. You may not hit him over the fence, but you're swinging away. So I think that, you know, those are two of the really big thematic things with him, is that, you know, undying, you know, adherence to the artistic view, and that compulsive need to kind of control everything. But just, you know, just really respected the artistic view. And the other thing that I really love about him is just how sort of charmingly reckless he could be. Mm. And that's a word I don't use lightly.
It's a good descriptor.
people tend to take away the wrong, but you know, this is a guy who as a kid, terrible student, you know, he was drag racing and he was, you know, failing school. And his father, you know, who ran the stationery store in Modesto, said basically, you know, the doors are open for you. And he tells his father, no way in hell, I'm coming back here and I'll be a millionaire before I'm 30, but no way am I running this business. And he actually said, no way am I ever running a company, which he said his father got him on that one. But, you know, this guy who essentially has his path made for him and says, you know, I'm going to go do my own thing. I'm going to go down to USC and be a filmmaker, and sort of gambles his entire future just on that. Then once he is a filmmaker, he has American Graffiti, the, you know, biggest hit of the time, still, I think mathematically and per dollar spent, it's the most, one of the most successful films ever made, takes all that money and pours it into this dopey space opera that nobody understands. Nobody can understand the opening pages of it. Nobody knows what he's trying to do. The studio thinks science fiction is dead. He takes all of his own money and puts it into this project. I mean, incredibly reckless, but pays off. Takes all those profits from Star Wars, dumps them all into The Empire Strikes Back, and probably more importantly, into Skywalker Ranch. Tells Irvin Kershner, if Empire doesn't work, that's it. We're done. You know, but again, incredibly reckless. Dumps all his own money into Phantom Menace, $100 million, another independently produced film. It's all his money. Very reckless. So I love that he's constantly investing in himself, wagering everything, which you can see is very reckless. It always paid off for him. But then meanwhile, he turns around and is lecturing Francis Ford Coppola about how Coppola is so risky and he's being crazy and he's jumping off the cliff and he's not being safe. Lucas is doing it as well. He just happens to be making Star Wars every time he does it.
It's such a beautiful thing, too, to think about how he's a self-made man. And he's so much like you. I know in your book you compare him and Mark Hamill noticed during the filming that he thought that his character was almost like emblematic of George Lucas as a person, which I thought was a fascinating little section.
Yeah, I loved – I mean, Mark Hamill's quote was, he's playing it so small.
Yeah.
which is really – and so Hamill said, you know, I'm going to do it his way and show him how wrong he is, and then did it that way and went, wow, I'm actually playing George.
It's just amazing. He's had a lot of experiences, clearly, ups and downs, or way, way more ups and downs. But in your professional opinion, how did Lucas take the criticism heaped upon him later in his career? And I'm talking from the special editions to the prequels, right, to Aliens, right, and Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I love, by the way. But how did that affect him both personally as well as professionally?
You know, the fan response to you know, the digital remasters, and I, you know, I'm one of these, you know, Han shot first folks. I admit it.
As am I.
I'm not willing to let him get away with it. He can say it as often as he wants. But again, it's, you know, his response to that was, it's my movie. I can do what I want. Although I always wonder how he would have felt had Kurosawa gone back and tampered with any of his films. He probably would have, you know, screamed bloody murder on that. But, you know, his view on that was, these are my movies. Once the fans got outraged over Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, that was when he got off the internet. He stopped. Because I really think to him, hearing the fans bicker and bitch and complain and nitpick was too much like what he had gone through with the studios back in the 70s. You know, it was people who weren't involved in the film telling the filmmaker what to do. And that is the absolute worst thing you can do to him, is tell him what the movie needs to be. He's the one that gets to decide that as far as he's concerned. He's the one making the movie he wants. You just let him make it. Now, I really think the end of the line for him, though, was not so much Indiana Jones, but Red Tails. Because Red Tails was a really important movie to him. You know, there were a lot of people who said, well, he was only interested in Red Tails because he married an African-American woman. It's really not true. Lucas was sort of pitching that project and moving that project as early as 1990. And, you know, really believed in making it an all African-American cast and crew and director and writer. And, you know, that was really important to him. And once he started making that movie and people didn't want to distribute it, and when he would, you know, he was showing it to try to get, you know, studios to come and watch it to decide if anybody did want to distribute it, and some studios didn't even send representatives, that really bothered him. That's the point at which he almost literally threw up his hands and said, I'm finished. I think the response to Red Tails was when he thought, you know, this place has just – it's just hopeless at this point. You know, the studio system – at least Hollywood's corrupt. The studio system's corrupt. I think that was really his disenchantment, which he'd always had his entire career. But I really think that was the exclamation point at the end of the sentence. I think Red Tails is really, really a critical point for him, at which I think that maybe even tipped things in his favor, to the point where he said, you know, I'm ready to get out of this game altogether and sell my own company.
Now, I'm glad you brought up Red Tails too, because that's something that I think flies under the radar, and that makes sense because of the gargantuan behemoth that is Star Wars and the Star Wars franchise. But yeah. You mentioned Indiana Jones, which is, of course, wonderful and so many Star Wars fans love as well. Let's talk a little bit about that franchise and George's relationship with Steven Spielberg. How do those two creators complement one another? And what does their relationship do for them as filmmakers and friends?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of the finest and warmest and realest relationships in cinema and in Hollywood and in, you know, in entertainment. I mean, these are two guys who genuinely love each other, genuinely like each other's movies. Both of these guys love movies. I mean, watching these two guys succeed is really the ultimate revenge of the nerds. Mm-hmm. You know, they met back in 1968 when Lucas's film THX-1138 for EB, a big mouthful, was winning every major award. It was showing at Royce Hall at UCLA, and Spielberg, who was at Long Beach State, was in the audience and saw it, and at that point said, you know, all of my idols up until then were John Ford and Walt Disney, and now here was a guy my own age who I could really admire. And so that was the beginning of their friendship, you know, happened in January 1968. Went backstage to meet Lucas. What I love about it is even both of them in telling that story, Spielberg's the one that tells the story with the warmth. We came backstage and we met and we shook hands, and, you know, that was the beginning of our friendship. And Lucas says, I think maybe there was a handshake in there. I know we met each other. You know, Lucas is very, you know, very non-sentimental on it, and Spielberg's the very warm, sentimental one on this. And I think that's sort of their approaches to filmmaking in a way. Lucas, you know, Spielberg's the one who has filmmaking in his DNA. I mean, he has been making movies since he was 8 years old, filming his trains crashing into each other. Lucas came to it a little bit later. You know, he came to it in college, actually, and really liked the editing side of it and how you could use editing to tell stories and how you could use editing to cover up mistakes in storytelling. And so Lucas, you know, was sort of the great idea man. And Spielberg's the one who really loves movie making, loves directing. Lucas, you know, Mark Hamill has the great quote where he says, if George could make a movie without actors, he probably would. But Spielberg's the one that can put it down, you know, and get it on film and make it look wonderful. And Lucas is the one who can come in and say, here's the way the story needs to move, and this is what's going to grab your audience. I mean, they both have great feels for what audiences will respond to. You know, Lucas is the one that can give you the tools to make it work, can come up with the story. I'm going to digress for just a second, because what I think is so interesting about George is, you know, Francis Ford Coppola is the one who told him early on, George, if you're going to succeed as a director, you have to learn how to write. Coppola, who prided himself on his writing, has made his career adapting the work of other people. Lucas is the one creating the original iconic franchises at that point. The guy who says he couldn't write has done, you know, it's built his name on his own original stories, whereas Coppola's out there adapting Mario Puzo and, you know, S.E. Hinton. So anyway, Lucas is the one who with Spielberg can bring you this original material, these original inspired stories. He's willing then at that point to bring in other collaborators to touch up those stories, to write the scripts, take care of the stuff he doesn't like to do. But they're really a good – I don't even want to say yin and yang, because he and Coppola are more yin and yang. But they really complement each other well, because they both have that same passion for filmmaking and telling stories. And Lucas is the one that knows how to work the system, get you the tools, get you, you know, the digital filmmaking, get you out at Skywalker to do it. And Spielberg's the one who wants to go out there and make that movie. Lucas, it doesn't – he got better at it in the 90s, but he was never really the one who loved sitting there in the director's chair. He liked to go do the second unit stuff, you know, the people falling off the bridge in Indiana Jones at the Temple of Doom. That's the kind of stuff he loved to go do, the really fun sort of weird stuff. Then Spielberg could be the one working with the actors.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. and it's all free.
The variety makes it fun too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
It's a beautiful thing. And I like that you mentioned the idea of storytelling, because they're both storytellers, as is comparisons to another person you did a book on, which you mentioned, and that would be Jim Henson. How would you compare the experience of writing about Jim Henson with writing a book about George Lucas?
You know, they're both very different kinds of books in a way, because with, you know, with Jim, he doesn't, you know, his, first of all, it's weird doing a living subject as opposed to somebody that's been dead for 20 years. So that makes it a little harder, because with Jim's story, you know how it's going to end. With doing George Lucas, you still, it's still being written. And that can really throw you for a loop as you're approaching the ending of the book. You know, the ending keeps changing. You don't know where it's going to go. So that's one of the real challenges of writing about a living figure. The other thing with Jim is, you know, I had access to his private archives. That was one thing I really pitched to Lucasfilm, was I really wanted their private archives, but couldn't get into that. But both of them are very heavily archival research. You know, using materials that are available. But the hardest part of it, I think, is that you, with George Lucas, the ending is fuzzy. You don't know how it's going to end as you're writing it, because again, you still, I was able to go back and, you know, after the first draft came back to me in July. So I was able to go in and update what was happening with the museum. And you know, him trying to give away a museum that nobody wants. So I was able to go back and do that. But that, I think, is the hardest part of doing, you know, with Washington Irving had been dead, you know, 150 years, Jim Henson been dead 20, George is still living. That makes it very hard. You know, that ending just keeps moving.
And would you say, just as passionate storytellers, where do you find the commonality there?
Well, you know, they're both really terrific subjects that are very similar. They're both, you know, fiercely independent people, both in absolute dedicated pursuit of their own dream, their own artistic vision. You know, Jim did it with something like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, which are movies that, you know, as I always say when I talk about him, Jim was right about those movies, but at the wrong time. You know, they found their audiences 20 years later. And Lucas is that way too. It's, you know, something like Willow. People love Willow. He was right about Willow, but again, 20 years later. But this absolute commitment to his own artistic view and taking all of his own money and putting it back into himself, which is also something Jim Henson did. Now, Jim Henson wasn't dealing with a $4 billion company. There were times he was dealing with only a $15 million. But taking your money, owning your own work, and that was something very important to Jim Henson. He told his agent, never sell anything I own. Jim owned all his own work. George owns all his own work. That is the most critical thing you can do as a creative person if you are absolutely committed and driven by pursuing your own artistic vision. Own your work.
Most definitely. And I feel like with this next question, you've hinted around to it a lot, but I'm curious, just for you as a writer and as a person, what did you learn about George Lucas through this entire experience that you're going to take with you and incorporate into your own life?
I think part
to
of
be
it.
Be a billionaire? That would be a good one.
Yeah, that would be. I would love to live out on that ranch, I'll tell you that. you know, I think part of it is that unapologetic need to, you know, need to protect your own artistic view is really something I think that needs to be appreciated today. And which is something that, you know, that I'm hoping I can start to do. But, you know, Lucas is one of these guys who, you know, thinks that the artist view matters, that, you know, that there are things more important than the dollar, which is, you know, funny when a guy's ahead of a $4 billion company. But, you know, Lucas was one of these guys who would complain about Hollywood, how the deal was the movie to them, not the movie. So I think, you know, that's a viable lesson for all of us in this. You know, you want to earn your living doing this, but the movie is the deal, not the deal is the movie. So I think that's one thing I really came to appreciate. Another thing is actually how funny the guy is. And you don't really think about that because he seems so serious, and a lot of times he looks cranky and uptight. The guy really has an interesting sense of humor. He's very funny. He's very self-deprecating, especially later in life. I mean, you watch him doing his own voice on, you know, Adult Swim. I mean, look, the guy gets it now. You know, the guy understands it. It's perfectly okay for him. I guess you could say he can afford to be the butt of the joke, but, you know, but really gets it. And I think there's something to be said for that, too. Now, you know, Jim Henson was this way. Don't take yourself too seriously. I think George Lucas, especially with age, has really come to appreciate you don't always need to take yourself so seriously, especially when you've run the table.
And I can say unequivocally that I've read this book. The publishers were nice enough to send me one.
And oh, great.
It's a wonder. It really is a wonderful, fascinating book. It's a great read, especially for the holidays. And now that the Star Wars films have been coming out around Christmas time, I think even more Star Wars and Christmas go together. Well, this is a great Christmas book for anybody who's a George Lucas fan, a Star Wars fan, or a filmmaker, or a person who just is passionate or enjoys movies, because the process is almost as interesting as the man and his creations. And you've done such a beautiful job of capturing that. And honestly, as a Star Wars fan and as a writer myself, as well as an English teacher, I value your prose. So thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. Now, which is your favorite film there, Dan?
Empire Strikes Back.
That's probably second for me. And I'm still an original Star Wars fan.
Me too. And it's like one in one. You really can. Honestly, though, if I had to pick my favorite George Lucas creation, it would be Indiana Jones, both the character and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You know, that it's interesting you say that. If you go look at my Twitter profile, my photo, I'm wearing my Indiana Jones hat.
I saw that. I love the fedora. Well done. You and Dave Filoni.
It is actually an Indian. It has the little logo on it. So
that's pretty great. So where can people purchase George Lucas Alive, and where can people reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello?
Sure. George Lucas Alive went on sale today. Everywhere. So you can get it at, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. It's at Sam's Club, from what I understand, which means it's probably at Walmart. I think it's at Costco. You know, independent bookstores, it's kind of everywhere, which is really thrilling and fun for me. You can find me online on Twitter at Brian J. Jones, all one word, spell out my middle name, J-A-Y. I use my middle name because if I don't, you get the Rolling Stone. My website is brianjjones.com. You can find me there. You can email me through brian@brianjjones.com. I'm always love to hear from people. But, you know, follow me on Twitter. That's where I do a lot of messing around and having a lot of fun. So I also have a Facebook site, Official Brian J. Jones. So you can find me there as well. Plenty of places, but shoot me an email. I love to hear from people. And guess what? I'll even write you back.
Which is fantastic. And we will have a link to all of those things in our show notes, as well as a link to purchase George Lucas Alive. Again, a great book. And we have two copies that we are going to give out free as a contest and early Christmas present from Brian J. Jones and Coffee with Kenobi. So look for that on our website very soon as well. Now, before we let you go, Brian, we have our five questions we ask every guest here on Coffee with Kenobi. So we will jump right into this for you. And
all right.
What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
My favorite is the original Star Wars.
Who or what is your favorite character?
I am a Han Solo sucker. I have to admit it. I love Han. I always wanted to be Han when I was a kid. I was not cool enough. And my brother, who's younger than me, was always gracious enough to let me play Han to his Luke. So.
And honestly, is anyone cool enough to be Han Solo besides Harrison Ford?
No, absolutely not. You're absolutely right.
What is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
You know, I always come back to the goofy ones, like, you know, 3PO going, wonderful, for some reason. I find myself saying that all the time. It's not the years, it's the mileage is one of my very favorites, which is not Star Wars, but it's one of my favorite Lucas lines.
I love that one as well.
And
I find I say that more as a parent than I do.
Yeah, and then a line I used the other day on my own blog, which is a line of there I love, is, great kid, don't get cocky.
If you collect... What is your favorite Star Wars collectible that you own?
You know, I don't collect, but I was 10 when Star Wars came out, and my younger brother was 7 going on 8. So we had almost every Star Wars toy and action figure up through Empire Strikes Back and early Jedi, all of which I carted around with me for the last 30 years until I finally sent them to my brother, who does play with them with his own boys, but as he says, he wrings his hands and they make sure they do so very carefully. So my favorite toys from that era were, we actually had the Millennium Falcon that would make that really weird whining noise when you'd push the button, mm-hmm. And had the the gunner seat where Han would sit upside down to work work the gun. So I loved the original Millennium, the Kenner Millennium Falcon.
As do I. It's one of the great prizes. That and the Adat, I think, are quite awesome.
If, yeah, you know, the one that I wanted that I never got is I never got the Slave One.
Really, I have that. What I want to find again, and it's been lost in through all the moves, but I would love to get my hands on an original Kenner Death Star again. Those things are amazing. A lot of good memories.
We had that one, and I loved it. Had the you know, trash compactor with all the foam garbage.
Yes, and the Dianaga. That's pretty much how we think of him, the Dianaga anyway. That image.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That rubber Dianaga. Exactly.
What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
You know, one thing I love about Star Wars is it's got this very elegant simplicity to it, meaning you know who the good guys are. You know who the bad guys are. There's none of this moral ambiguity, which, you know, in the 70s, although we didn't appreciate this at age 9, was, you know, very refreshing. But I think that's one of the reasons that kids my age responded so strongly. We knew who the good guys were. Even somebody like Han. Yeah, he's a pirate, but Han's a good guy. It's clear from the start. He gunned down Greedo. He's still a good guy. Get over it. So I think it's sort of inherent optimism is one of the things that's really inspiring about it.
Well said. Yeah, I mean, it's hope. People always come back to hope. And with Rogue One coming out, which obviously he didn't create or make, but there's certainly his inspiration is heavily throughout it.
Right.
We're looking forward to seeing it.
I am so psyched. I think the trailers look fantastic. And when I heard initially that, like, that was the plot, the storyline they were gonna use, my first response was, my God, why did nobody think of that earlier? That's brilliant.
Oh, I agree. And just the fact that how it's all coming together and the creators behind it. And we're hearing good things. And, of course, it was just released recently that George loved it. So that's encouraging as well.
The thing that I have the hardest time with is I have a Google crawl, you know, that searches for Star Wars and George Lucas. And it's like I don't want anything spoilery. So it's like half the time my Google crawl shows up. I'm like, nope, delete, delete, delete.
I understand. We are at Coffee with Kenobi. We're about as anti-spoiler as it gets. So we're right there with you. Right. Brian, thank you so much for being a guest on Coffee with Kenobi. We look forward to seeing what your writing does in the future and revisiting this book later when everyone else has read it. And it'll just be exciting. Thank you so much for your contributions and for being a guest on Coffee with Kenobi.
Hey, it's been my pleasure, Dan. And anytime you'd like to have me back, I'd love to come back. So thank you. And thank you, everybody.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.